Shukracharya is meaningful. Shukracharya stressed that one's material means of livelihood and one's material reputation, sense gratification, and economic development must continue properly. To see to this is the first duty of a man who is a householder, especially one who is interested in material affairs. If a religious principle does not affect one's material condition, it is to be accepted. At that time, at the present time, in the age of Kali, this idea is extremely prominent. No one is prepared to accept any religious principle if it hampers material prosperity. Shukracharya, being a person of this material world, does not know the principles of a devotee. A devotee is determined to serve the Supreme Person of Godhead to his full satisfaction. Anything that hampers such determination should certainly be rejected. This is the principle of bhakti. Anukulayasya sankalpa prita kulasya varnam manam. Okay. Madhyalila 22, text 100. To perform devotional service, one must accept only that which is favorable and reject that which is unfavorable. Bali Maharaj had the opportunity to continue to contribute everything he possessed to the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva, but Shukracharya was putting forward a material argument to hamper his progress of devotional service. Under the circumstances, Bali Maharaj has decided that such hindrances should certainly be avoided. In other words, he decided immediately to reject the advice of Shukracharya and go on with his duty. Thus, he gave all his possessions to Lord Vamanadeva. Om Agyana Timirandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksusmiri Tanyena Tadmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaitam Surito Pangor Mamamanda Mater Gati Matsarva Sva Padambo Jo Radha Madha Namomano. So there's a Bali's now, after due consideration and a pause, he's now structured his answer. And he's starting to speak to Shukracharya. And it's interesting to note, when I first read this, I was thinking here how it is that Bali Maharaj is first saying, I think that this religious principle is correct. He's agreeing with him. So, of course, there's different thoughts that came to mind on that. So I remembered there's a conversation in Madhyalila chapter 8 between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. And when he was asked by Lord Chaitanya to say something about the goal of life, everything he stated was perfectly correct by the Shastra. But yet Lord Chaitanya, he said, for I think at least the first 8 proposals, that this is external. So even though it appeared to be correct, Lord Chaitanya wanted to say something more on the situation. So in reflecting on that, I noticed that there's external activities and internal activities. Sometimes the two are they go along fairly easily. There's no much difficulty. But in this particular circumstances, he has the paramount collision between these two of external and internal situations. Because Srila Prabhupada explains, you know, that externally one performs, he should always maintain his sadhana, but internally he has another type of activity that can continue. So I'm going to kind of take that point a little bit of external and internal. And there's a couple verses that I thought of. First one's from 10:33-32. It says, "My dear Prabhu, when these great persons who are free from false ego act piously in this world, they have no selfish motives to fulfill. Even when they act in apparent contradictions to the laws of piety, they are not subject to sinful reaction." And then there's this, to give some explanation to that, there's this nice verse from Madhya Lila 25, text 265. Krishna tattva, bhakti tattva, prema tattva, sara, bhava tattva, rasa tattva, lila tattva, ara. And this translation is Krishna consciousness means, I always like when it says that. Krishna consciousness means understanding the truth of Krishna, the truth of devotional service, the truth of love of Godhead, the truth of emotional ecstasy, the truth of transcendental mellows, and the truth of the pastimes of the Lord. So, right after that verse, it continued where it says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has personally preached the transcendental truths and mellows of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are identical, for Srimad Bhagavatam is the sound incarnation of Sri Krishna. And then the next one was, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broadcast the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. He sometimes spoke for the benefit of his devotees, and sometimes empowered one of his devotees to speak while he listened. And then the purport prophet says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an ideal teacher or acharya, explained Srimad Bhagavatam very elaborately himself. He sometimes also empowered his devotees to speak while he listened. This is the way of an acharya should train his disciples. Not only should he describe the Bhagavad cult personally, but he should also train his disciples to speak on a sublime subject. So, just a little bit more, because that was all sane men within these three worlds certainly accept the conclusion that no one is more merciful and magnanimous than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and no one is as kind to his devotees. It says, by understanding the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can understand the truth about Krishna. By understanding Krishna, one can understand the limit of all knowledge described in various religious scriptures. The pastimes of Lord Krishna are the essence of all nectar, and that nectar is flowing in hundreds of rivers in all directions. The pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are an eternal reservoir, and one is advised to let his mind swim in this transcendental lake. Okay, so I don't want to read too much. So in this external and internal existence that one has, it's also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. I was thinking of two points there. In text 5, 5th chapter, text 24, it talks a little bit about this connection that's being made. It says, one whose happiness is within, that's one who's active and rejoices within, and one whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. And they had the yogi was the word that they translated into mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme and ultimately attains the Supreme. So this is some of what Bali knew and Sukracharya wasn't functioning on this level, apparently. So it says, purport by Prabhupada, it says, unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? So, because Bali Maharaj was experiencing something, which will turn to the back part of the Bhagavad Gita, since he's known, he has a reputation, actually, he says, if you really want to have a reputation, the best reputation is a devotee. After Krishna has explained all the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, thus I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential, deliberated on it fully, and then do what you wish. Because you're my very dear friend, I'm speaking to you my supreme instruction and most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. Always think of me, that's internal. Become my devotee, that's internal and external. Worship me, offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. But then the next verse is probably the most quoted verse. I don't know if Prabhupada quoted a verse more than this or not. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not worry. But the next verse, we don't quote very often, but I thought it actually applied here because Sukracharya has now presented all this knowledge, all his material understanding to Bali Maharaj, and now Bali Maharaj is in a real pickle. He's in a situation where he's going to have to try to explain something internal. So what does Krishna say? Right after he gave these instructions about surrender, most confidential is surrender because you're my very dear friend. What else does he say? He says, this confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor one is envious of me. So here's Bali. He has to, he's on the line right now. And he has to say to his spiritual master, I'm not going to listen to you. And we know that in the past, people can really get in trouble for that. And he's aware of this. But of course, we've understood that externally, he was a spiritual master. But we, in the circumstances, we can understand actually Prahlad Maharaj was his real spiritual master in spiritual matters. If there's the external world has its formalities that one generally is required to follow for the most part. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. This particular situation, it's not working out for Bali. So he's diplomatically and also shastrically correct, pointing out that what you say is correct, but that's always when that word comes up, he has to say that what's going on inside, like this this knowledge that we get, mantra. Mantra is an interesting concept, looks like a word, but it's connecting you to an inside situation. We're actually learning, we're developing. One time Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is the education of your subtle body. We're actually educating our subtle body how to properly think, how to properly feel, how to properly will, all in these subtle bodies. Because in this material world, the first ingredient for this material world when it becomes created is the false ego. But there's something subtler than the false ego, and that's our relationship with Krishna. So the false ego is already a byproduct of our relationship with Krishna. And from there on, it just gets more entangling. So I had a couple more notes on that here. If I can go through it. So in the very beginning, devotees externally, because externally one is only can have symptomatic, what's going on internal is invisible. No one sees what's actually going on inside. But there's certain symptoms. Just like we know if we look outside and we see ice out there, we can tell that it's cold, even though you don't see the temperature. You see the effect of the temperature. You can see the wind blowing. So there's different symptoms of internal. So when this internal orientation is active, then the first quality that manifests is humility, because the external situation now doesn't have the highest priority. There's a higher priority than the external situation, is the internal situation. So this internal situation is explained as knowledge. One gets knowledge of this internal situation. And in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verse 8 through 12, it gives a list of different qualities that manifest as one is changing his focus from external to internal. And it mentions like humility, pridelessness, nonviolence. So how are all these things taking place is because he's making that internal connection. And that's also why the word is called mantra and not just a word. It's connected to this internal orientation for having you properly, sometimes, I think last time, I said, get your intelligence in order, because, like, funny, that when it's out of order, it instead of it being taking directions from the super soul, it takes directions from the senses through the mind. And that sense, the intelligence is out of order for what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to give you proper guidance, but it's out of order in the two aspects. One, it's not in the proper position, and two, it's broken. So, out of order. Okay. So when we hear about this Krishna consciousness, one develops what they call faith that this exists. Because where does this exist, this prema bhakti? Where it exists? It exists eternally in your heart, nityasiddha Krishna prema. This is where it is. It's not someplace outside that you do something outside and you get it. There are things that you can help you do that, but it's an inside adjustment that's being made in our consciousness. The only thing that changes is the consciousness. So with this knowledge of what is really going on outside and inside, one starts to develop his internal life. And that internal life, or we awaken it, is just like sadhana. When the internal life is desired, it says, what time of awakening for, time of sleep for all the conditioned souls is a time of awakening for the self-controlled. So this, they use the word prasati, I think it sees. He sees inside, introspection. He sees through the eyes of knowledge, through the eyes of Shastra, what's actually going on. And by that, he's seeing the different potencies of Krishna. It's a whole transcendental experience that's going on. So it's a doshrata. He gets a little bit of faith that this exists inside every one of us, inside our heart, is pure love for Krishna. But we've become dazzled and confused by this material energy and lost our way, so to speak. So adoshvara sadasanga. So you start to associate with people that know how to do it, the apprentice program. You're seeing people that are experiencing something, and regardless of the outside. So of course here Bali Maharaj, he's willing to give up everything, practically. He has everything. He's in an extreme position, and he's still in the... even when the demigods are in heaven, they have a lot of regulations that they are still in the mode of goodness and trying to be pure and religious, where the demons, they don't even have any of that. They don't have to do any of that. They can just enjoy everything, because that's their nature. So here they are, Bali Maharaj is in, captured the position of Indra, and the king of heaven, king of the emperor of the universe, He has everything possible to enjoy, and he's just now saying, that's all right. I'm not going to trade that, because at this particular junction, how time has arranged providence for me to be in this circumstance. Actually, providence has arranged every one of us in a most fascinating position. It's custom tailored exactly for us, with every fine detail. Once one sees how to apply it in Krishna's service, so we see how Bali Maharaj is using this opportunity to and make advancement. So Srila Prabhupada, he quotes in the purport here Majjalila 22:100. So I thought that I would read that also. It says, the six symptoms of surrender are the acceptance of those things that are favorable for devotional service. So the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full surrender, and humility. So of course, if we think about some of these points, he's using this circumstance as a opportunity being presented to him to surrender and reject something that's unfavorable, and accept certainly Vishnu's there, Vamanadeva is there, and the conviction that Krishna will give protection. Do you think he had any stories from his family line about Krishna giving protection? A little five-year-old boy against the biggest terrorist that ever lived, trying to kill him. And what was, did Prahlad take like a weightlifting course and some judo and things like that? No, here's an innocent little, he didn't even do anything to protect himself. He just remembered Krishna. That's all he was doing, remembering his relationship with Krishna. Krishna, if you want that this happen, if you want, don't let this happen, whatever you want. He was just remembering Krishna, not even. So that's in Bali, that's who he grew up with. I'm sure Bali growing up, Prahlad would, his grandson, you know how grandchildren are always very dear. So here's Bali and Prahlad. So you can only just imagine what type of information. Plus it was still current in, isn't it? Imagine growing up in the same place where everybody in their memory could remember, oh yeah, your grandfather, phew, he was really rough. And then Lord Nisringadev, Lord Nisringadev came personally. So I don't think Bali would have any, he didn't have quite that degree of surrender where you're being thrown off a cliff, put in boiling oil, trampled by an elephant, poked by all these people with spears. His surrender here now is coming in just giving to Vamanadeva. But it's the same, they're actually both listed in Prahlad's instructions. Was it Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam? I think he's Atmanivedanam. Right? This is Bali Maharaj, who gave everything to Krishna. So in this way, one can see that once one develops this internal existence, which here it mentions that Shukracharya, it's also said that he didn't understand this. Being a person of this world did not know the principles of a devotee. So this principle of devotee, there's reciprocation that's taking place. Sometimes I get caught in trying to understand something, and you see me taking my notes and I'm thinking about it. So one of the points that I brought up earlier, it mentions this word relish. And if you buy a new car, as soon as you get your car, you start to notice all the other cars on the road that were the same as yours. You never saw those cars before, but as soon as you get this car, now you see, oh, there's so many of these cars. So when you start to think about a particular word, like relish, you start to see it everywhere. Like the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to concentrate on this every day of our life when we say the Guru Vastika prayers, the second Guru Vastika prayer. The first one is how Prabhupada is receiving benediction from this ocean of mercy. And of course that mercy, how come Shukracharya didn't understand and Bali did understand? He says, even if you try to understand the pastimes of Krishna, he says, unless you get at least one drop of the mercy of the pure devotee, you can't understand it. So Bali's in this position where he's going to try to talk to somebody and hopefully get the mercy. He gets some mercy there, accept the mercy. So the next verse is the spiritual master, he's enlivened. One can read into that a lot too. By the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, where he's dancing, playing musical instruments. So we can picture Prabhupada, he was playing a mridanga. He says, my father wanted me to learn all everything. And because he's relishing pure devotional service inside, in his mind, sometimes his hair stands on edge, quivering in his body happens because he's learned this. This is what it's in. Now, the mind, a lot of times, it's your friend or your enemy, it's mentioned. I've noticed that when Krishna's in it, it's your friend. When Krishna's not in it, that's when it's your enemy. Of course, he's always there, but apparently, by reciprocation, by if you ask him to come there and stay there. Because I was thinking, you really never know someone till you live with them. Isn't that the saying? You never really know someone. So you have to invite Krishna into your heart to live there, not just once in a while, but then you get to, you know him like that. Anyway. So that's one place where there's relish. And there's another place in the Guru Vastika prayers that the word relish is mentioned in the translation. Anybody think of it right offhand? 9, 4, relishing prasad. Well, I don't know that one, but you're close. The next one, what is he always anxious about? Says the spiritual master is always anxious to hear about pastimes of Radhika and Madhava, which are all in the modes of loving exchange. He's anxious to relish these at every moment. So there's another. So if you think about it, what it is that, and of course, Srimad Bhagavatam, how should we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam? With rapt attention. Okay, that was one answer, 1344. But what's the third verse say? Who knows the third verse of the Bhagavatam? O thoughtful men, the next word, all right. O thoughtful men, relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not just that you should hear it. Yes, you should hear it, but there's an extra ingredient that they're asking you to do. And I was wondering about it. I was thinking at first you understand something and that there's some happiness in understanding something. And then the next stage is that you realize it. So realizing it by applying it gives you so much more happiness when you realize, oh, now I get it. And then that also matures. Following my line of thought, what do you think it matures into? Come on, anybody? Relish. Yes. So it goes to understanding, to realizing, to relishing, because what we're actually connecting with is Krishna, and there's a reciprocation there. As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly, bhajan aham. So that's the same principle. So when this takes place, sometimes they use the word sweetness. Madhu or Madhava, there's different sweetnesses, and if Dravida was here, he would give us a nice poem about sweetness. He has all these poems. Everything about Krishna is sweet. So, of course, for our stage, we have jaundice. So it doesn't appear so sweet. However, we're getting instructions that if you keep on taking it, just like if you have jaundice, which is, I think, a liver condition, isn't it, where your bile, there's something out of line, so you everything tastes bitter. But the medical situation was that you take sugar, which tastes bitter, but then it starts to get sweet because it's naturally sweet. So this is our natural sweet condition, is to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association devotees and cultivate that. Right now it's out of duty. We're doing this because of obligation to our spiritual master's instructions. But then it'll just continue to sweeten up as time goes on. I'll read the verse again and see if there's any questions or comments. Bali Maharaj said, "You have already stated the principle of religion that does not hinder one's economic development, sense gratification, fame, and means of livelihood is the real occupational duty of the householder. I also think that this principle is correct." Of course, when I saw occupational duty, give up all forms of religion, give up all occupations, and just surrender. So he's a good example. Sometimes his Bhagavad Gita is telling you why, and then Srimad Bhagavatam shows you how. So you can see that, those principles. So are there some questions or comments, please? Yes, Shangit Thakur.
Hare Krishna. It seems like to pay rapt attention, and that involves our effort. We're really focusing. But then to relish seems to involve that taste or reciprocation of the Lord.
That is a very nice point and observation, because a lot of times it's talked about this bhakta lata bija, and that's referred to as taste. And then there's 259, which is param jusva navardante. By experiencing taste, this internal higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. So this consciousness, when it's not being when the senses are seen properly. In other words, one should be seeing Krishna everywhere, because Krishna is everywhere. But if you have the cataract of material desires in your eyes, you can't see that. So we're doing this surgical operation of removing these cataracts by taste. So that taste actually does clarify your vision, until it turns into prema anjana, where you actually do see Krishna everywhere. So that those words, they may be synonymous. There's a couple different ways that they're actually a lot of fun. And I was thinking that this is such confidential knowledge that, as like I said in that 1867, you don't talk about it. So generally, this type of knowledge, people don't talk about it. There's a gravity that the devotee has for most people, but with friends, then they can smile. You know, we can be happy with each other because we're sharing the same Krishna's experience. But with the non-devotees, you can't really say it so easily. They misunderstand everything. So that's why he says that. But for devotees, we relish each other's association. 325, 25. He said the Srimad Bhagavatam is properly discussed when it's with other devotees. So that's a unique feature, and we see that goes on. Even Lord Chaitanya says this is one of the foremost principles that there is. Mat chitta mat pranam, is it? How's the verse go? Yeah, say it nice and loud. Okay. Ah, with the microphone. She's got something to say, please. Very rare that you Thank you.
In that verse, Machita Matkata Prana, in the Purport Prabhupada said that in the neophyte stage, which is, you know, you relish the service, actually. The relish is not in the higher plane. It's just the regular service. You relish that in the neophyte state. So
he likes
very much. He said that. Do you want me to read it?
He gives it. It's a grace period, I call it. And that's also another pun that right in the first six Sastika prayers, he says, helps to give you a full taste that you're always anxious for. But we don't really have a clue so much how it's all working. Just like you take some medicine, you're not a doctor. You don't know what's going on by this particular chemical reaction in your body. How's an aspirin know if you have a backache or a toothache? You know, but you don't have to. It says if you just chant, associate with Krishna, and be happy. Just like it says to dance before the deities. I notice now we have some other times people dance, and it's very attractive to see. Like if we're jumping for joy just by being with Krishna. So this dancing is a part of our service to please Krishna. We've come here and we're very happy. So when he sees us dancing, that's good. Because even said the spiritual master, he's enlivened and by the Sankirtan and he's dancing. So he's training us. He says, come chant Hare Krishna and dance in ecstasy. Did you want to read that or you want me to read it? She's getting the book, she's going to need it. This being enlivened in Krishna consciousness, Prachodaya, sometimes it's actually for a brahminically minded person, three times a day he's supposed to meditate on how this enlivenment is coming to him, where it's coming from, what it is. He should know. Deep he is meditated upon and there's another one that means you should know it. I say it all. Vidmehe.
So anyway, the translation of that verse is, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So it says here in the second stanza, in the preliminary stage of devotional service, they relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself. And in the mature stage, they're actually situated in the love of God. So our stage is, you know, serving the deities.
Relishing the service itself.
Yeah, relishing the service itself.
And it says that one can do that forever. He said that pleasure that one relishes. And then there's another verse, 1:5:17. It says, even if he leaves, not in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavatam, where Narada Muni is talking to Vyasadeva, and he says, even if someone doesn't complete devotional service, he will always remember that happiness that came from that relishing that service. So when you do some service, a necessary ingredient there is to try to notice how relishable it is, and that just means being conscious, you know, getting that internal connection a little bit more moving, flamed up. Thank you. Oh, more? Yes. No, I'm always a late person.
There's one devotee here that I've observed for quite a while who does a lot of service in the morning during japa period. He gets things ready, and he seems to always be relishing these little details of this service, or in the arti, the tulsi kirtan, he's just relishing in it. It's encouraging to me because it reminds me that every aspect of our culture, our service, our daily affairs is transcendental, and that's waiting for us.
Just the tip of the iceberg is on the surface.
Then I had one question that Prahlad Maharaj, such a pure devotee, and Lord Nrisimha, they came and protected him in every way, physically. So we're not like that. And so how does Krishna protect us?
how Krishna is protecting you in so many different ways, but for the answer for that kind of a question, you could say, is he's giving you your independence to remember his instructions. In other words, he's given you dimensions that he's not different than Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. So because you have independence that he'll never interfere with too much, he says 15:15, from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and remembrance, knowledge, and what else is it? What is it? And forgetfulness. Oh, I forgot. it's funny. Krishna has a sense of humor, you know. So sometimes I was saying, you just read Bhagavad Gita for God's sake, you know. Chant Hare Krishna for God's sake. That's a kind of a pun also. Anyway, so in our stage, we're on probation, where he gives you a little something and he wants to see what you're going to do with it. And the nature of probation is that you're given an advance without full credit yet. They're taking a chance, and they're going to see how you're going to deal with your past inclinations. Now that you know what it is, and you've had some time to think about it in the big lockup, the clink, and now they're saying, okay, we're going to let you out and live a life, a liberated life. However, it's almost, it's imperceivably liberated. And we're just going to see how you're going to do with this now that you've, with your past inclinations. And after, there's things like remorse, those type of words, where you think that what I did before was wrong. If you're still inclined to do it again, you know, like if you let somebody out on parole and they're still inclined to do the same thing again, what'll happen? Very soon they'll get the opportunity and they'll be back in jail again. But someone who has learned his lesson and has understood that there is something fundamentally wrong with the material existence, not just from our point of view, like if you say you're up for parole and the person says, are you ready to leave? And he says, I'm ready to leave. This place is horrible. Let me out of here. He said, well, that's not the right answer. It is part of understanding that jail is terrible, but that's not the reason to get out. Everybody wants to get out of jail, but what will you do on the outside, or the inside in this case? So and this situation comes up that Krishna fulfills your desire, so you have to be introspective to recognize these desires, and when they come up into your mind or thinking, feeling, and willing, one takes this as a opportunity of the parole hearing to consider, have you learned your lessons, or are you still inclined towards this? So you take that as an opportunity for integrity of your knowledge, realizations, and you make a prayer at that time. And then you can continue. If you just say, yeah, that really did sound good, I kind of missed that, you know, when am I going to get another shot at it? Then the protection will take another form. That Krishna, he works individually with everyone. So he may allow you some, a long leash, they say. Sometimes it's a short leash and a long leash. You're familiar with those terms? You keep someone on a short leash. As soon as they move 1 inch, I'll yank on their choker chain, you know, they jump back. But Krishna gives you enough rope to hang yourself. And then just before the trap door falls out, unless you're really determined, he says, you come the next day, then you can, there's the repenting, there's some kind of activity like that where you have to know that there's something that we've done wrong. And you have to make that right. We're trying to make it right, you know, with Krishna. Your relationship, he's a person. We've done something wrong in the relationship. You know, like there's spousal abuse, very common thing. So the person comes in the next day and just pretends like nothing happens. They'll just do it again. oh, I'm really sorry, I'll never do it again. Then he does it again. So how can Krishna, when for a devotee, Krishna gives himself to that devotee. So he's also surrounded by people that love him, that want to protect him so he doesn't have any. So protecting us, we're also think about protecting Krishna. So there's, it's a little complex like that. If you think that there's, if you want to approach Krishna but your mind hasn't changed, then he's also has to check that out. Like if you knock on the door, the person on the other side of the door says, "Who's there?" So they're checking out to see who's there, who's knocking on my door. And then if I give you some nice realization, or do you have the integrity to maintain that connection to that? Or is it, yeah, well, easy come, easy go, wait for the next time? So relationship that we're building. So the protection comes from keeping your consciousness clean and pure and following the sadhana and having sincerity in your prayer. That's the best I can say. Is that all right? Aglaya Shilpa Pada.